Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Dr. Guy Gumbo Talk with your host, Dr. Tanisha Guy, and her co-host, Steve and Stacy J. This show is not intended to be therapy, but the sole purpose is to encourage dialogue across ages, genders, sexual orientation, religious backgrounds, and sex. So feel free to join in the discussion. We want to know what you think.
Talk. So I am so delighted that you guys have decided to tune in for another Sunday. Today's topic is probably one of my favorite topics, or at least it's something that I talk about often with my clients. Today we're going to talk about how does your emotional intelligence impact your relationship. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce my co-host as always, and then we're going to get started. Hey, Steve.
Hey! Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I know you fellas can be watching football, but you are so tuned in to the Dr. Guy Show on a Sunday.
Right, on a Sunday. I forgot I compete with football on Sundays. Hey, Fatima.
Hello. And I'm happy about the people who are joining, and I also just want to say go Saints.
Well, go ahead, Fatima. Go Saints. I'm not mad at you. So, how does emotional intelligence impact relationships? So, right before we started, Steve, Fatima and I was talking, and I mentioned that emotional intelligence is definitely something that I talk about. I'm sure Fatima talks about as a clinician. But this wasn't our topic selection. This was actually your topic selection. So, how did that come about, that this was something that you thought would be a good topic selection for us?
Well, thank you for outing me like that.
Anytime.
As the only non-paid clinician on the line, although I probably do get paid in pastries, pies, cookies, and maybe a trip to the movies and some popcorn from time to time. This is something that my friends and I have discussions about as it relates to some of the relationships we've been in and some of the mistakes that we have made in the past as well as some of the mistakes our partners have made. In the context of a relationship, you have to have some emotional intelligence, which is not something that is easily gained or readily available in society. Some unwritten rules of things you should do in order to be able to conduct yourself in a relationship. Like if, you know, we're arguing and we're arguing about me leaving the toilet seat up, which is a terrible thing to do. And I have three toes and I'm sensitive about my three toes. You can't call me a three-toed sucker who left the toilet seat down because my toes don't have nothing to do with the toilet seat. And that is not necessarily fighting fair. You know, there has to be some intelligence in how you go about, you know, your interactions with your mate. So now what started out as a valid issue as it relates to me having not left the toilet seat in its proper position, now I feel personally attacked because you're talking about my deficit of having toes. So, you know, now we are not fighting fair, and there's not an emotional intelligence to that. You have to stick to what the issues actually are, because when you start getting off issues and attacking people personally, it turns into something else. So you have to be emotionally intelligent in how you deal with people. Like I was telling the story this week earlier of how I had a friend whose girlfriend had been abused while she was younger sexually, and so she was averse to oral sex. But that wasn't something that he was willing to understand. Even though oral sex made her relive the trauma, he wasn't emotionally intelligent enough to understand that and be compassionate about what space that put her in. So that led to the demise of their relationship. So there are various ways where you need to be able to be emotionally intelligent with your partner, whether it's arguing, whether it's relative to their past experiences. But these are things that will come up while you're getting to know each other that you have to be cognizant of for the relationship to grow.
I totally agree, Steve. I think personally, emotional intelligence is probably even more important than IQ, because there are just so many things that are related to your emotions, but people seem to negate them. I want to go back because I realized that I just opened up and started talking about emotional intelligence as though everybody talks about emotional intelligence. And so I just want to briefly define emotional intelligence and talk about how it impacts people and then talk about how it impacts relationships. And Fatima, I also want you to chime in and talk about your definition of emotional intelligence and also how it impacts people. But when we look at emotional intelligence, it's how we recognize or just even understand how we manage our own emotions. We have all encountered, or we might be that person who goes from 0 to 100, who for some reason doesn't seem to be able to keep a lid on their emotions, and they might be explosive. They may be emotionally overstimulated easily, and so that speaks to someone's emotional intelligence. And we don't talk about it in typical conversations with people. We observe it often, but we don't say anything about it. It's also having the ability to understand and influence the emotions of others. And so that's extremely important, not just when we're talking about romantic relationships, but also platonic relationships or work relationships. So today we're going to talk about just in general emotional intelligence and how learning to manage those emotions can really improve all of your relationships. So, Fatima, what are your thoughts as it relates to emotional intelligence?
Well, I can only add a little bit to what you said. What you said was pretty spot on. I'd say that it's almost like a second language. And in being able to, because a lot of people are limited in their emotional vocabulary. Like we may know angry and happy and sad, but there are a lot of other emotions that are happening that we may not have the language to name these other emotions and things that are going on. So the first thing that I would say with emotional intelligence starts with actually building your emotional vocabulary. And I think that, and then understanding and identifying when you are experiencing certain emotions, how it impacts you. Part of emotional intelligence is also knowing how and when to self-soothe, because I think that's part of the problem is that a lot of people don't know how to self-soothe, or once they start flooding, they don't know how to physiologically calm themselves down and take themselves out of that state. And then also understanding the and sort of being able to read the emotional state of others. So I think all of that is encompassed in emotional intelligence.
Absolutely, Fatima. I definitely agree. And Steve, I did put you on the spot going to you because you select the topic, but I put you on the spot because it seems like we attribute emotions as something that typically women only feel. And even though we know that's not accurate, we don't allow men, I think, in society to really own and embrace their emotions unless it's something like anger or frustration. Like, it's acceptable for men to display or identify and hopefully even manage those. But just in general, when we talk about emotions, that doesn't seem like a place that men are open to dealing with or even talking about. So I was really glad that this was a topic that you selected and you're aware about how that impacts your relationships with other people.
Well, definitely. I wanted to ask a question. What is self-soothing? I'm not too familiar with that term.
So self-soothing would be, there are a lot of different ways to self-soothe. It could be something as easy as a breathing exercise. So when you, I'll go back to when I said if you're flooding. So if somebody's flooding, I would describe them as their heart rate might have increased. Your lips might be pressed together. Your brow maybe furrows or right. So you're having these different things going on that are impacting you physiologically. So when you get in that state, it's almost like being in a fight or flight situation because your body is doing things to protect you. And so when you get in that protective mode, you lose the ability to reason. Your humor turns to sarcasm. So you'll say things like the, oh, you three-toed bastard, right? Because all you're trying to do is protect yourself. So you go to, like, your basic instinct. So self-soothing would say, oh, I realize, like, things in me are changing. My mouth has become dry. My heart is racing. I can't really breathe very well. So I realize there's a change happening in my body. And so now I'm going to do these breathing exercises. Or now I'm going to take a time out and take myself out of the room. Or I'm going to start moving around. Or I'm going to start doing some cognitive exercises to take me out of this place where I'm negatively filtering everything. And so it could be one of a lot of different things, but it's a tool. I guess I would say self-soothing is a tool that you would use and yourself from a emotional place back into your baseline homeostasis.
Yeah, it prevents you from becoming a volcanic eruption. And most people have some self-soothing techniques that they use. Some use theirs more effectively. So ideally, people who have higher EQ are going to be better at self-soothing because they're better at being able to manage their emotions.
Okay. Definitely. So I think that one of the interesting things that we always kind of talk about is the double standards. And they are in place in society for a reason. A woman who has interactions with more than one man may be labeled in a certain way. but men who are overly emotional are labeled in a certain way as well. So I think that was one of those trade-offs. So that's one of the reasons why men tend to stay away from these expressions, because if you're over-emotional, then you're considered a weak man. So men tend to err on the side of being more of someone who keeps those emotions to himself to prevent from gaining that label.
So, Steve, I agree that we definitely have some societal norms, and they are biased. But one of the things that you said is if a man is overly emotional. And so what I heard was the overly. So whether you said a man being overly emotional or a woman being overly emotional, to me that would seem to be a problem. Like, I don't think men want to be with women that are overly emotional either.
Well, true, but that doesn't get you branded in the same capacity. Like, say, for instance, because it's a sliding scale, you know, what you may consider overly emotional, Fatima may not. Like, I had a friend who was telling me about one of her sorority sisters that was having a problem dating because she perceived men who took naps as being lazy because her father never took a nap. So, you know, that is her scale of what laziness is. So, you know, it's not something that's pretty concrete in terms of what is emotional versus overly emotional. It's more on a case-by-case basis. So I think that's why you'll find men who are less prone to show emotion because they don't know where that sliding scale starts and ends.
But whether you're male or female, the lack of showing emotions is not healthy. Like, typically it's displayed in other ways. And again, these are going to be people with lower EQ, and people who generally have lower EQ will show that their relationships with people are not as good as they can be.
Right. So, there's definitely a correlation, but from the masculine perception, if I present myself as strong but flawed, it's easier and more accepted than if I present myself open and weak.
You lost me, Fatima. Did you get that last part?
No. You said there's a different perception if you present yourself as open.
Strong and flawed versus open and weak.
So if you're open, that means you're weak.
You can be presented as weak. You're more vulnerable because you're open. Like, you're presenting yourself in a position where you're more vulnerable. Like, say, for instance, if you have a gentleman who is very guarded and there's a situation that comes up, there might be a reluctance to confront him because you know he's guarded and aggressive. Versus a gentleman who's more open and willing to discuss things, there will be more of situations brought to him because his response is known to be open and vulnerable to those things.
So
kind
it's about
like
how people receive you.
Right. It's kind of like having, you know, a dog that growls and is a known guard dog versus one that you come in and he's more prone to lick you to death. So the dog that is going to lick you to death is going to have more problems because he's not perceived as a threat. Not saying that that dog won't bite you, but the perception is that he will bite you less quickly than the guard dog. So that's what I'm saying. From the masculine perspective, men are more prone to put up a front or facade, whereas they are not going to expose themselves to be in situations where they can be threatened or perceived to be weak.
Okay, Steve. Well, if you guys are just joining in, today we are talking about emotional intelligence and how and if it impacts relationships. It looks like we have a caller, you guys. I am going to go to the phone line. Caller at 214, you are on the air.
Hey, Dr. Guy, this is Zandra.
Hey, Zandra.
Hey, Steve. Hey. Steve. I'm not sure if you, I know you're not sure. I know you're not totally aware of what emotional intelligence is, but I want you to know that there's a Harvard Business Study that shows that top CEOs that are successful are in touch with their emotional intelligence. That is the top thing that makes them successful, which means they are in touch and understand what their emotions are and are able to understand theirs and others. So if a man is able to understand his emotions and understand his partner, that doesn't mean he's weak because he understands how his emotions run. It just means he's able to control how they are given. So it doesn't mean that he's overly emotional, but he knows when to share his emotions, and that means he can share his emotions. It doesn't mean that he's weak because he shares his emotions. And a person that shares all their emotions are well-rounded. A person that doesn't is a person that has issues, such as the world will take a man's anger before they'll take a man crying because that's acceptable.
Uh-huh.
But a man has tears just like a woman does. So everybody needs to get in touch with all their emotions. So if you are to have a good relationship with a woman, then you need to be in touch with your emotions, understand how they work. And that way you can understand yours, and then you can understand hers, and that way that relationship can go both ways.
Well,
thank you,
relationship
therapist.
I thank you as well, but Steve doesn't have a problem with his emotional intelligence. I'm just talking in general.
Oh, I forgot about that. Okay, I'm sorry.
So I'm quite aware of what you're talking about in terms of leadership. And there is a difference between an environment that is controlled and structured like a workplace where there's an HR department, there's corporate culture, there's procedures and protocols, and creating a relationship where that is a framework that you start with another person. So I'm aware. I understand what you're saying. I'm just speaking in general terms.
Well, it was valid that men and women should both be open to embracing their emotions. It's healthier. But I'm glad that you brought up the Harvard study, because most people that talk about emotional intelligence, they go back to the Daniel Goleman book, Working with Emotional Intelligence. And so he talks about the Harvard Business School study that highlights people who have higher levels of emotional intelligence are better leaders. And so whether, you know, they're leading in corporate America, they're leading in entrepreneurship endeavors, these people are able to communicate more effectively with other people. And that's probably because, as Fatima said, they have better self-soothing mechanisms. You know, when someone says something and you just want to, you know, flare off the hook, they don't do that. And so they're able to communicate in a way that someone who has a short fuse isn't able to do. And I think it, you know, in certain situations we have all probably had a short fuse moment, but it may have been a moment versus this is someone's norm. And that's a little bit different.
Right. But if we learn to bring that into our relationships, I think we could have better relationships. And I think that's part of where we deal with our clients that way, if we can help them to bring that into their relationships. Because I understand that's how in corporate America, but we need to learn to bring all of ourselves into corporate and to our personal.
So to my two.
And also one of the, real quick, Dr. Guy, also one of the.
Go ahead.
The studies that has shown that's why there's a surge in female-led organizations is that women tend to have a higher emotional intelligence than men as it relates to those environments and dealing with people in general in the corporate structure. So I'm well aware of it. I just think that it's difficult to create because there's not really a template to use in a relationship format. So it takes a lot of work for both parties to, one, have a concept of emotional intelligence for what that means with that person in that situation, because we all have different needs as it relates to how we need to be dealt with. Some people yell, Some people don't yell, like we talked about last week, those avoidance styles. So there's a lot of things that need to be put into play and a lot of tools that can be used. That it would be nice if some counselors came up with a program to help people be emotionally intelligent. But since I'm not a counselor and they're certified, or, you know, I can't do that.
I know. That program would be so nice if it was offered online and they can log on at any time to do that program as well. Just a thought, Steve. Just a thought.
Just a thought. I know, right?
I know. So we were talking about bias, and I was going to ask a question to the two couples therapists, and then you said something, and it triggered something else. So let me go to the couple therapist, because Fatima and Zandra, you both do couples, and that is your areas of expertise. So when couples, one person has a higher level of an emotional intelligence than the other person, what are some things that can happen? Because I think we have some listeners that are curious to say, well, do I have a high level of emotional intelligence? Does my partner have a high level or low level? What are some indicators to let someone know what where they are? I mean, definitely there are some scales that you can take to just determine that. But if you're in a relationship, what type of behaviors and things would you see that would be indicators on where you might fall on the scale?
So some of the things are that you are more interested in the other person's feelings and thoughts. You can
higher level
you're more
of
aware of your you're more aware of your own. You avoid putting, when you argue, like you were talking about when you scream and talk, you avoid putting it on going personal. You go more towards what the issue is and more, not toward personal. So when you have a higher, you won't go to that, you three-toed person. You won't go into that when you have a higher emotional intelligence. The person that has a lower one, especially when it comes from their past, they will go that direction more often than none. And so the person with a higher emotion.
I just want to clarify. So an individual with lower emotional intelligence in a disagreement in their relationship, typically they may be the ones who are going to deliberately say things that they know are painful to their partner. Like they know that this is one that is going to get the jugular.
Yes, hurt people want to hurt.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Definitely more intense.
Go ahead. Continue.
I'll let Fatima go now.
Oh, okay. I would say if there is some level of emotional intelligence, I'm not going to say a specific people, but just in the relationship. If in the relationship there is a lack of emotional intelligence, I would say you can ask yourself a few questions. You can ask yourself, do our discussions get heated too often? So if most of the time you're having a discussion about something, and more often than not, if your answer to that is, yeah, our discussions tend to get heated more often than not, that's a pretty good indicator that emotional intelligence may be a problem. You ask yourself, do I have a hard time calming down when we're having heated discussions? If your answer to that is, yeah, more often than not, there might be an emotional intelligence problem. If one of you are more likely to say something that you'll regret later, yep, that's a sign. So I think that I try not to, when dealing with couples, to single out just one person. So I like to look at it in terms of the relationship. So if you're thinking about it, like if these are things that are occurring a lot in our relationship, well, then, yeah, there's a problem with emotional intelligence in that relationship.
And not who has a higher or a lower either. It's not so much as who has a higher or lower emotional intelligence. It's, you know, we have a problem with it, period. That
right.
way,
and
that it's not that.
And we can change it.
You against me. Right.
Right.
And when you said it's not the you against me, when both of you guys were talking, I was thinking about other examples of someone who may not have a high level of emotional intelligence. It's someone who doesn't receive feedback well, and they take it as criticism. And it doesn't matter whether it's at work and their relationships, like they just don't receive it well. Or someone who doesn't deal with change very well. So relationships are all about growth, right? But in order to grow, that requires change. And so people get stuck in what they have been doing. And 10 years later, one person has changed or grown, and the other person is still doing what they were doing 10 years ago. And so that might speak to someone who has a lower level of emotional intelligence as well. We do have a question that was posed by one of our listeners, and I thought it was a really good one. So he said, in a relationship, what is most important, attachment style or emotional intelligence? That's a good question.
Can you repeat it?
In a relationship, what is most important, attachment styles or emotional intelligence? And a week or two ago, you gave a great explanation of the various attachment styles. So,
That's a really good question.
I kind of rank them neck and neck.
I do too. I think emotional intelligence, definitely emotional intelligence, because I can be cognizant of your attachment style and know how to manage that. But if you're just an emotional idiot, that's something totally different.
Great point.
You know what?
Wow.
You're right.
That's a great point for the non-therapist. You are a good therapist.
I only get paid in
cupcakes and pies and occasional popcorn in the movie.
I think they're both so important. But when Steve posed it like, well, if one is acting like a fool emotionally, that may be more of a challenge.
That's true, because we can overcome our attachment style. Once we become aware of it, we can overcome that. But like you're saying, it's kind of hard to overcome your foolishness when you're a fool and you don't realize it, or you don't want to, or your insecurities, you don't even try. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of right. You can, emotional intelligence, that's true.
Well, I think I have an advantage over you all is I date women, so I'm pretty adept at
both. I gave him a compliment and then he messed it up.
So you are the only one that calls and dates women, Steve. Right. So what happens sometimes, you can't go to the cat. You have to let the cat come to you. So that's how you kind of sometimes have to manage that attachment style. So when the cat gets there, you need to know if it's a crazy cat or not. But, you can't necessarily chase the cat. It just comes around when it wants to. So
you saying that doesn't work for the dog as well as the cat?
Not at all. Two separate animals. Behave totally different.
No, because the dog is more notorious than the cat.
The dog can be trained, as Pavlov has documented.
He spends way too much time talking to me.
Yes,
right.
he has.
So you can ring a bell, but that don't mean the cat's going to come. You ring the bell,
guess
the dog's
what?
Gonna come, and he's gonna be salivating.
But guess what? You can teach the cat to pee inside, where you can't teach the dog to pee inside most of the time. So, like I said, the cat can also be trained.
Oh, I know the cat can be trained. Oh, I know that.
Yeah. So the dog is just as vicious, or more vicious than the cat. But
attachment style.
You guys and the cat and the dog. I was going to say
definitely
the cat
talking
and the dog,
about attachment style.
I think I would now be in favor with going with what you said, Steve, that emotional intelligence.
I don't know why I always think y'all agree with me. Like,
it hurts me. It hurts me. It does. It really does. But yeah, it hurts me. That's what I'm going to go with. Fatima, what do you go with, emotional intelligence or attachment style? Which one's more important in a relationship?
Honestly, I think I would say attachment style. Because I think if your attachment styles are compatible, you'll probably have less emotional blow-ups, and when you do, they might be more manageable. So I think I probably go for someone who has a compatible attachment style, because you can have all the emotional intelligence in the world, but if the way that we come together.
Uh-oh. Fatima?
We lose her?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Oh, now we can.
Hello? Oh.
Fatima?
Y'all didn't hear anything I said? Okay, so I said.
No, you said the way they come together.
Right, so if the way they come together doesn't work, then all of the emotional intelligence really is out the window. Like, you know, if you're trying to get someone who's avoidant, it doesn't matter how well you can de-escalate situations or yourself or self-soothe, because if they don't want to be bothered, they don't want to be bothered. Our attachment styles are incompatible. The emotional intelligence.
Fatima, we have a bad connection. Yeah. Sorry, Fatima. I feel like I'm playing the devil's advocate because, Steve, I was on board with you when you said emotional intelligence in your example, but listening to the part that Fatima just provided, now I'm thinking it's which one came first, the chicken or the egg? Because if you think about attachment, and right, here I go in my head, if you think about attachment, and Erickson says that the most important part of a child's life are the first early years, the first 5 years. So if our attachments teach us how to relate to people, how to express emotions, then if you have those early attachments that are healthy, in essence, you will have a better chance of developing a higher emotional IQ. So attachment styles may be more important in a relationship, because if those are off, then it probably puts you at a disadvantage for being able to develop a higher level of emotional intelligence. Fatima was on.
Well, that is true. That is true.
I'm back.
Yes.
Okay. That is true, but what I am saying is that you can manage your attachment styles. You can't manage an idiot. If you have someone who is an avoidance, then you know not to chase them because they're just going to avoid. If you have someone who's just a plum fool, you can't change a plum fool. So there are tactics that you can use to combat an attachment or style, whether that's avoidance, whether that's deflection. There are tools you can use to manage that where that can be negated to a degree, but you can't educate an imbecile.
Okay, okay. I
see where you're going, but I think you're assuming that the average person is, oh, this person is an avoidant, or this person is an anxious, or right. So I think a lot of times people go into relationships not even realizing, or get caught up in certain cycles and tailspins, like the pursuer keeps chasing the distancer, and they repeat those cycles because that's part of that pattern. So you're assuming that the person is going to say, oh, if I keep pursuing, they're going to keep this. Me stop. Like,
I can only speak to what I have done. So I don't know about everybody else. I don't know what people are doing in their spare time. But I'm saying, as it relates to my dating, I can manage your attachment style But I cannot manage if you want to call me a three-toed bastard. I just can't do that.
But
you know, if we got in a confrontation. Go ahead.
She is most likely wanting to call you names and hurt you because of her attachment style. So if she had a secure attachment style, most likely she's not going to be the one who wants to attack you when you guys get into an argument. Now, if she has an anxious or disorganized attachment style, she might be more willing to engage in that type of discussion with you. So you could, in essence, change someone's EQ based on their attachment style.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying what I've had success with. It is far easier to manage the attachment style than it is to manage the intelligence. Because that gets into, like you talked about, those first years of living. And did you feel safe? What environment did you grow up in? Were you spanked? Were you not spanked? Was your father around? I can't change that. I can be cognizant of it because it lets me know what your emotional intelligence and attachment style is. Now, do I want to go in and try to educate you emotionally? To a degree, I can do that, but it is way easier to have these conversations with you and ask about your family, your structure, private school, public school, did you go to church, and develop a profile to manage your attachment style than saying, hey, if I leave the toilet seat down, please don't call me a three-toed bastard. So I'm just telling you what has worked for me. And not in theory, not what's in a book, not what in practice. These are the cats that I've managed and trained.
I wonder if this, like, I wonder if this is maybe a difference in men and women. Like, would more men be likely to say they'd rather the emotional intelligence over the attachment style? They'd rather the attachment style.
I believe so, because men are, we tend to have to deal with more of the emotional outbursts on a more consistent basis, I believe, than women do. Not that men can't be emotional, but I think that
men can
the
be
consideration,
emotional too.
I'm not saying that men cannot be emotional. I just want to say generally on a per-situation basis, I probably have dealt with more emotional women than you have dealt with emotional men.
Okay. So
yeah.
So when you say emotional women, yes, women might exhibit their emotions a little bit differently or more, but let's say a guy may not kind of do the volcano thing, but his response is to shut down and to not respond at all. That speaks to his emotional intelligence level. Like, he can't even process what it is that he's feeling. So that's a challenge too. I mean, like, he's not the blurting out, calling names necessarily, but that's just as damaging in a relationship.
Yeah, like, you're not winning because you're stonewalling. When men do that shutting down, that's one of the top four predictors for relationship failure.
So is it that it's an emotional outburst, or is it more of his attachment is weak to you?
Wait, repeat that again so I can process it.
So is it really, when you're talking about these men, is it him shutting down, is it emotional, or is it really him expressing his attachment style and becoming detached because he needs to process? Like, I think you all may be confusing the two in that regard. He may be shutting down to pull away because that's how he has been taught to process from a society standpoint.
But just because that's how that's been taught doesn't mean that it's effective. It's ineffective. If he's shutting down, this is a communication issue.
Right,
but this is a communication issue because you're saying he might.
Perhaps perhaps you're mislabeling the emotions from the attachment. So that's why I'm saying it's easier to manage the attachment or detachment than the emotions. So I think that what may be happening is because women may be misdiagnosing the emotions as more of the attachment or detachment. So
okay,
what
I,
I'm telling
I
you relative
there.
Relative to these situations, like I'm telling you about chasing, you can chase a cat, but the cat's going to run away. It's going to come back when it feels like it. A lot of times with women, what you all don't understand is I may need time away to process. My time away makes you uncomfortable, so you chase me because you want an answer. You want to feel included. But I need to go in my cave and process. So the more you chase me, the more I go away because I don't feel safe. I don't feel comfortable. I need to process this and come back to you. But that makes you feel uncomfortable, so you keep following me. Yeah.
See, so
he needs to communicate.
You said I need to process and go
if
away
you need to
and come back. That's different. It's different
yeah,
than the guy
if he
who
needs
shuts
to
you down and does not open it back up again.
Right. So what
those
I'm telling
two
you is
types.
There's a point. There's a point where that's healthy, and there's a point where it's not healthy. So I think what I'm saying
right.
is, like I'm telling you with women, there comes a point where I need to let the cat come to me. There's a point where you need to let the man go away and process in his cave, and he's going to come back. But the more you poke him, the further he's going to go in the cave. So what I'm telling you is it may be not only you have a problem with emotional intelligence, it might be a problem of you don't understand men and or detachment style. Generally, the man is going to come back, but he just may not come back in the time frame that you're comfortable with, so you go create a whole other problem by chasing him. So that's the same thing I'm saying. There have been a lot of women in my life that if I were to chase them, they would have ran away. I may have even ran to another man if I continued, but if I gave them enough space and put some catnip out, they'd sure come back to the front door.
I just think oftentimes they go hand in hand. People who, and I'm so glad that he posed that question about attachments because you really do see the two of them impacting individuals in the same way, like negatively, and also when they're having healthy attachments in a positive way. But if someone has an avoidant or anxious, even disorganized attachment, typically, when they respond to people, their emotional intelligence level shows that there is some difficulty in how they interact with people. Like their social skills are not the best. And that's related to their attachment style. So I'm still going to go with the attachment. And again, I think this is like which one came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, we really don't know.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say,
if I could give me a stable creature, then I can deal with her attachment style. But an emotionally unstable creature is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. She's emotionally unstable because she has four attachments. But go ahead, Fatima.
That part about him having to go away and process, I'm totally pro taking a time out, organizing your thoughts. But that to me speaks to emotional intelligence on his part if he's not communicating that. So if all he's giving is silence, I'm not talking anymore and I'm leaving and I'm going to wait for the cat to come to me or whatever that is, he's not that's a flaw in his emotional intelligence, because if he communicates, you're giving me a lot right now and I need time to decipher it all, and I need time to get my thoughts together, I'll get back with you when I'm ready to engage in this conversation or I have some feedback. That's a completely different thing, and that shows a heightened level of emotional intelligence. If I can communicate to my partner what's happening with me and have that time to do that, then just stonewalling. That's the problem.
And that
I
speaks
agree.
To that level of emotional intelligence.
I agree, but what we also have to look at is demographically speaking, who was this person's initial influences from the ages of 0 to 5? Was it a baby boomer? Was it someone in Generation X or Y? So if we look at how those different generations dealt, you know, my grandfather didn't come home and tell my grandmother stuff. That's just not how that generation was. So if you come from a generation where there wasn't a lot of expression and communication and things were interpreted, then that's going to be how you internalize things. So if you find some people that were raised by their grandparents, it may not be that they're emotionally, you know, stupid. It's just that's not the model they were given. So still goes back to what I'm saying relative towards if you get that information first, then you'll be able to manage the attachment styles based on the profile you've created and give me somebody who's emotionally intelligent based on that. I can create a profile so I can tell what you're going to do by what environment and what stimuli you had growing up. So once you have that information, you're not going to expect someone who's raised by a 70-year-old to come and be highly communicative.
Well, at the end of the day, I think what is important to take away is that individuals can change their level of emotional intelligence. Like, they can increase it the same way you can increase your intelligence level. And so there are some helpful tips that someone can engage in so that they can become more aware about their emotions. And that's really one of the first steps. And so there was an article written by Dr. Patricia Thompson, and she talks about steps for you to improve your emotional intelligence. And she says the first thing that you should do is just become self-aware, like have a deeper understanding of what it is that you're feeling when you're feeling it. And she says people don't always connect to that because they're so caught up in the emotion or that particular event, and they're overwhelmed by the emotion. They don't take time out to say, is this anger that I'm feeling, or is this hurt? Is this some type of pain? So she said become more self-aware. Second, she says be open to criticism and feedback because to be open to criticism and feedback helps you see those images of yourself that obviously you're not able to see. The next thing she says is to practice mindfulness in all areas of your life. And so in the clinical realm, everyone is talking about mindfulness and how it's just another way for those people that don't meditate. It's just a way to return back to homeostasis and balance when you're having a stressful day, regardless of what's going on throughout the day. She reminds people to just breathe. And that sounds so simple, but when someone is spiraling out of control and they're feeling like they're on overload, that's one of the things that they can do to just de-escalate the situation is to start taking these slower breaths. And so that's part of the process. And then she says, lastly, question your story. And I love that part because sometimes we get caught up in our own narrative, and it's not even an accurate narrative that we've been telling ourselves. We've been telling ourselves something that is irrational. But because we've been telling ourselves this irrational narrative for so long, we begin to believe it. So she talks about all those things and recognizing them, and those are some helpful tips to increase emotional intelligence. So I thought that was a pretty interesting article to share before we wrap up. So we have a few minutes left. Fatima, what do you want our listeners to take away from today's topic?
I'm going to give our listeners something that they can start to try to build their emotional vocabulary. So I'm going to talk about anger. If everybody has seen the movie Titanic with Leonardo DiCaprio, you remember the big iceberg, right? And so the captain of the ship sees the iceberg, and they're like, okay, well, if we steer really hard, we can avoid it. And they thought they avoided it, except what they didn't see, which is this bigger part of the iceberg underneath the surface of the ocean. And that would kind of jacked up the ship. So let's think of anger as an iceberg. Now, in terms of relationships, not the science aspect of anger, but in terms of relationships, anger isn't really primary emotion. Anger is a emotion, but it's what we often show or what we see. So we'll see the anger or we'll show the anger, But underneath that anger iceberg, there's usually a lot of other emotions that are going on, and that's really the primary emotions. That's the thing we're really feeling. But sometimes we don't want to feel that, so we don't want to feel the sadness or we don't want to feel guilt. We'll display anger. So if you get in a situation with your partner and you are feeling like, I am so angry, I want you to stop and ask yourself, am I really angry or am I embarrassed? Am I scared? Am I overwhelmed? Do I have grief? Am I feeling helpless? Am I anxious? Am I disappointed? Do I have regret? Am I hurt? Am I worried? Am I insecure? Ask yourself, what else is going on? Because maybe it's not really that something you can identify what else might be. Maybe have a conversation with your partner about it.
All right. Thank you, Fatima. Steve, what's your wrap up for today?
The wrap up, this is to my gentlemen out there who probably aren't listening because they're watching football, but they may listen to the rebroadcast. So before you see that woman and those hips are looking right or the cleavage is looking all juicy, go over to her and develop a profile of who she really is. Make sure that it's someone that you have an understanding of. You understand her communication style. Is she going to avoid you? Is she going to run? Is she in confrontation? But above all, you know, make sure that she's emotionally stable. You can manage how she deals with you with her avoidance style, but you can't manage crazy. You can't manage somebody who's going to throw a shoe at you at dinner and call you a three-toed bastard. You can't manage that. But you can manage whether she calls you 50 times and hangs up. You can block that. But you can't manage crazy. So I'm just telling you, you can't manage crazy, Dr. Guy. So I'm telling you, before you get too deep involved, make sure she ain't crazy.
I'm going to go with the word manage. I don't think anyone manages someone that they're in a relationship with. I'm just uncomfortable with that choice of word, manage. I think that the word should probably be, I'm trying to think, something to replace manage, because that doesn't fit well with me. I feel like if I'm
Someone you're in a relationship with, but you manage somebody that's crazy.
Well, I think, you know, everybody's got a little crazy in them, Steve. So you mean people that just have lower levels of emotional intelligence. Maybe more challenging.
Levels of crazy then.
You know what? Look, one of our listeners, she said that here's a really good book for people who are interested in emotional intelligence. And she said, the title is, It's a Guide for Single and Married Women, The Love Lies. And it is by, I think this is Sabrina Jackson Gandy. So she said it was a good read. So anybody who was interested in finding out more about emotional intelligence. And also, if you're just wondering, like, what is my EQ? I'm curious. I've never taken a test. You can go online and Google emotional intelligence test, and you can take one online in 10 minutes. And so they'll give you a gauge of where you kind of fall at. Are you high? Are you low? Are you somewhere in the middle? And so if you're comfortable with where you are, great. If you're not, just know that there are definitely ways that you can increase that. And if you're someone who is aware that my relationships haven't been going the way I want them to go, this may be a good opportunity to engage in some of that self-awareness piece and look into maybe taking that EQ assessment. So, you guys, as always, thank you for tuning in to Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. Everybody have a blessed week. Don't forget to Facebook it, tweet it, pass it on, tell a friend about Dr. Guy's Gumbo Talk. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye, Steve. Bye, Fatima.
Bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.